Welcome to Post Carbon Radio, where we examine converging systematic failures in economy, ecology, and human coexistence on Earth. Rather than despair of these crises, we see them as related symptoms of a larger system that doesn't work, and which we can choose to replace. In that spirit, we search for concrete solutions, transformative visions, and ways to get there together. We look at hard realities with you on this show, remembering that big crises are also big opportunities we can act on together, building community resilience as we go. We believe that facing the facts and our deepest fears can paradoxically unearth our fondest wishes and best collaborative, creative nature. Won't you become a paradigm warrior? Join us in envisioning and building a radically better future on today's edition of Post Carbon Radio.
Thank you, Bing. Today on Post Carbon Radio, we're taking a look at how women are responding to the converging crises in the climate, ecosystems, the economy, and culture through leadership and vision. Our two guests in the studio are already established leaders in the fights for ecological sanity and social justice in the Bay Area. Joining us on the phone are Robin Milam, Administrative Director of the Global Alliance for the Rights of Nature, and Penny Opal Plant, a leader in Idle No More and an artist. Welcome, Penny and Robin.
Thank you.
Welcome to Post Carbon.
So, Penny and Robin, you're both on the air. Can we hear?
Thank you, Robin. It's great to be here, and especially great to be here with Penny.
Ditto about Robin.
Well, thank you. And there's so much to talk about with you two that I'm going to take a moment to read both of your bios to give our listeners a sense of what you're already involved in. Robin Milam is the Administrative Director for the Global Alliance for the Rights of Nature. Robin's passion is realigning human consciousness and restoring natural balance through the worldwide implementation of rights of nature. As a global advocate for rights of nature, Robin co-hosted the January 2014 International Rights of Nature Summit and Ethics Tribunal in Ecuador. She is co-hosting the second convening of the International Rights of Nature Tribunal, concurrent with the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change in Lima, Peru, December 5th and 6th, 2014. That's coming right up. She also participated in the UN Rio Plus 20 Earth Summit in 2012 in Rio de Janeiro, in Brazil, the 2011 UN Conference on Climate Change in Durban, South Africa, that was COP17, and the 2010 People's Conference on Climate Change and the Rights of Mother Earth in Cochabamba, Bolivia. Robin is an active member of the Bay Area Rights of Nature Alliance. Penny Opal Plant is of Yaqui, Mexican, Choctaw, Cherokee, and European ancestry, and was born and raised in the Richmond-San Pablo area under the shadow of the Chevron refinery. She became an activist in 1981 regarding nuclear weapons and power. Her current focus is on indigenous rights, climate change, the environment, and the rights of Mother Earth. And we'll be talking about the difference between the concepts rights of nature and rights of Mother Earth. Penny is one of the founders of Idlemore SF Bay. She is a small business owner, poet, and artist. And while we're doing it, why don't you, Penny, can you mention the name of your gallery?
Yes, Gathering Tribes. That's in Albany.
And you do special events there too, right?
We do a lot of artist events. We have an annual Dia de los Muertos ceremony and altar and literary events. Our biggest event of the year is the Native American Women's Poetry Evening that's on this Saturday around International Women's Day in March.
Wonderful. We'll be listing some upcoming events at the end of the show, so stay tuned for that. And it's just wonderful to have two women with such a rich background. And I want to point out for the listeners that Bing and I actually have connections to both of you, some of which we know about and some of which we don't. Bing and Penny were both attending, what was the name of that conference, Bing?
Earth at Risk. It was in San Francisco over the last weekend, Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, and so we'll talk more about that. And then Bing and I actually met in Cochabamba. Robin, I guess I didn't meet you there, but I'm very pleased that you're here with us today. So we have a lot to explore together.
Yes, we do.
So, Robin, starting with you, I was just on the web looking up something else about environmental health and toxics, and I was in the Science and Environmental Health Network, and I came across the Women's Congress, and that's what led to this show. The Women's Congress was put on by Future First. Can you tell us who is Future First and what is the Women's Congress?
Well, the Women's, it's actually the Women's Congress for Future Generations, or for the Rights of Future Generations, and it had its birthing in Moab, Utah, 2 years ago, September 2 years ago, where a group of women came together with a vision looking at how do we focus on really coming up with solutions to ensure that we as ancestors today are leaving a healthy planet for our future generations, and taking that concept not just as generations of people, but also as generations of all our relations, of all species, of all natural ecosystems. And so it started, Carolyn Raffensperger, who has been doing a lot of work around the precautionary principle, rights of Mother Earth, and future generations, rights for future generations, was one of the inspiring women. But as she began to talk about the concept, the idea grew, and the first group of people that put it together were women, many of whom were from Moab and the Utah area. And I was actually in Moab for that conference, and we were all talking about we've got to do this again. And a woman by the name of Ann Manning out of Minneapolis said, we're going to do this, and I'm going to be the spearhead to make it happen. And she went home and began gathering her friends and colleagues in the Minneapolis area, and said, just took a stake, put a stake in the ground, and said, we want this to happen. We want it to happen in the heartland. And where in Moab, we had about 150 women and some men. Men were invited specifically as witnesses, but in Minnesota this last month, we had over 425 women.
Wow.
So it's, you know, it was, who are the people? There are women who care about our planet who just said, we're going to make this happen.
That's a lot of women. What actually happened? How did you get 425 women who are organized and together?
Well, the invitation went out. First of all, we had a preliminary reception or a pre-conference reception, and then on Thursday night and Friday morning we had large working session, and then the conference started at noon on Friday and ended at noon on Sunday. And some of the keynote speakers included Sandra Steingreiber, who is a biologist and an author who happens to be in jail at the moment because she took a stand for her community in terms of what they were getting ready to do with the sand in her community and re-putting waste back into the ecosystem around there. And anyway, she's an incredible woman and a powerful speaker. And also we had Rhianne Eisler, and anyway, it was a really wonderful set of speakers, as well as many breakout sessions that were involved in engaging women and putting the key issues on the table and looking for solutions, not through addressing the symptoms, but how do we address the core issues and come up with core solutions. And that's what frames the work in terms of looking at rights for future generations, which is deeply grounded in rights of nature,
rights of Mother Earth.
Yeah, I noticed that one of the concrete outcomes of the Congress is this declaration on the rights of future generations, right?
Yes.
And I also noticed online a mention that some tools were being developed. Were those the two main outcomes, concrete outcomes of the conference?
In the Moab Congress, we came up with the Declaration for Rights of Future Generations. And we did that as a living document, recognizing that over time we will be modifying it and working with it. And in the Minneapolis Congress, we created a companion declaration focusing on the waters, because that was the theme of the Minneapolis Congress. And so we tailored a declaration that's focusing on the rights of the waters for future generations. But we are also creating a set of tools for people to work with, study guides around what do we mean by rights of nature, what do we mean by the precautionary principle, and what do we mean by future generations, and how can we as individuals and as communities be in action, and tools to help jumpstart that. And we're still, those tools are being developed, some of which are, one or two are already on the website, but we'll see after the holidays more starting to be uploaded.
And let's mention that website, because I know if I were home, I'd be wanting to write that down right now. Which website should people look at?
So the Women's Congress for Future Generations is futurefirst.us. So that's the word future, FUTURE, and the word first, FIRST, dot us, US.
Great. And so those are some concrete outcomes. Some of them are in production. There's going to be more showing up over the holidays. And then what are the next steps? It sounds like you all are a large group of very charged up women. What's next?
Well, there are several things that are in the making. We define some actions that we wanted to be taking. There's a group of us that are looking to create a wisdom.
You know, we're getting a few interruptions, maybe a call waiting. Can you restate that?
Yes. So, sorry about that. There are small groups are also defining actions for themselves to be taking. One of which is a wisdom council that a group of us are looking at creating, and looking at how we can be coaching young people as well as other women. And so there are a variety of actions that are in the embryonic stages of kind of percolating, but we're encouraging women, much like what we with the Global Alliance for Rights of Nature did in October. We hosted a Earth Rights Days of Action around the world. And what we did is we encourage people to self-generate. Look at what you want to have happen in your own community and look at ways to start putting some structure around that, whether it's an event such as what Penny and I came together with the Bay Area Rights of Nature Alliance in October and hosted a tribunal where we looked at the Chevron refinery in Richmond and the toxicity that Penny and those of you who are in the Bay Area are living with, and some of the impacts to the explosion that happened at the refinery, and did an examination of what were the violations that occurred not only to the human members of the Bay Area, but also to the environment and to the water species and to other inhabitants of the area. And we brought in experts on the, some were scientists, some were indigenous peoples who are native to the area, and looking at the impacts on culture as well as the environmental impacts, and examined how we could be, first of all, framing the issue differently, looking at the relationship of we as humans to our planet, and how how our legal systems and our culture and our social systems are feeding the impacts, and looking at how do we make those changes. So the Women's Congress is taking a very similar approach. Let's lay out some tools, lay out some ideas, and encourage people to begin self-generating and get involved in organizations in your own community, such as Idle No More and our Bay Area Rights of Nature Alliance and other organizations that you identify with and that light you up, so that you can be in action in a very positive way.
What I'm hearing from you, which I think is important, is that while you bring in experts to do an analysis of a situation, that really this is led by regular people, if you will, right? Regular women just deciding, I'm going to step up and I'm going to connect with one of these organizations, and, you know, together we'll figure it out and we'll bring in experts if we need to. But that it sounds to me like a call for women who may not have a fancy title or a fancy degree, but who are, you know, interested, active, and aware of what's going on in their communities, that this is an opportunity to step up and join with others who have resources and maybe a framework to help you get something off the ground.
Absolutely. And that's what was so wonderful about the Women's Congress, is that, you know, while we did bring in some people who have very specific expertise and who are very well known, Joanna Macy was also one of our speakers. The people that were participating in the Congress itself were everyday women like you and me and our sisters and our daughters and our mothers, coming together saying, things need to change. And if it's going to change, it's up to me to make a difference and to really listen to, you know, what's in your heart, and listen to that and allow your heart to lead, because it will take you to some very powerful places.
Well, you know, that sounds to me like a wonderful point to, I really want to bring Penny in on this conversation, who's been patiently waiting. Penny, you're still with us?
Oh, yes, I am.
Wonderful. One of the things I know you've organized is refinery walks in the Richmond area. And I don't know if you have comments you want to make following on what Robin just said, or if you'd like to tell people about what those were, because it sounds to me the connection in my mind was the heart, that those were very deep, deeply felt actions.
Yes, thank you. And I would just like to thank Robin for... It's always a pleasure for me to listen to you, Robin, so thank you. Mm-hmm. You always inspire me to think of different things, so I appreciate you.
It's very mutual.
Thank you. So, yes, our Idle No More SF Bay group organized a series of four refinery healing walks along the northeast San Francisco Bay. A lot of people don't realize there's five refineries along the bay there. We started in Pittsburgh, where there isn't a refinery, but where there is a proposal to build the Westpac Terminal, which would bring in huge quantities of fossil fuel from the Bakken crude in North Dakota and from the tar sands in Alberta. So the community there has been pretty successful at delaying a decision by the city council, but it's a constant fight. So we started there to bring attention to that project, and then we walked from there to Martinez, which has two refineries, the Tesoro refinery and the Shell refinery. That was the first walk in April of last year. The second walk went from Martinez to Benicia, which has the Valero Refinery. And then the third walk went from Benicia to Rodeo, which has the ConocoPhillips 66 refinery. And the final walk went from Rodeo to Richmond Chevron. And they occurred over a period of 4 months, one a month. And they were led by Native American elders in prayer with ceremonial staff. And there were between 70 and 180 people on each walk. Mm-hmm. And as we walked in prayer, those of us in the front, the people behind that were walking in conversation were able to really meet each other and talk to one another about what the issues were around these five refineries in the Bay Area. There were some amazing interconnected events that happened with hawks following us and ground squirrels walking with us for a couple of blocks, and we had a condor feather with us for the last walk, and lots of vultures. Every time I looked in the air, there were vultures, and I kept asking in my prayers afterwards, why were the vultures with us? And then the answer came that the vultures are the little brothers and sisters of the condor, and they felt that condor medicine. Mm. And so there was some really powerful things that happened. We stopped and prayed along the way at toxic sites and at each refinery, and we made a commitment afterwards to conduct the healing walks for a period of a total 4 years. And so we're already working on the next ones, and people who are interested could go on to Facebook and just look up Refinery Healing Walks, and the dates are on there and the information is on there. And I can tell any all of the listeners that it's a powerful experience, and that the walks range from 7 miles to 14 miles, and that at the end of each walk, it was hard for me to believe that we'd walked that long, because personally, I was shifted into a little bit of an altered state from the power of all of the prayers and the really good people that were with us. Another project that we're currently sponsoring is the All Eyes on Peru action. It's an Idle No More action that will be a week from today, December 1st, in San Francisco at UN Plaza. And Idle No More format is a prayer, a teach-in, and a round dance. And so everyone's invited to come. It starts at 11 o'clock in the morning, and they can just Google All Eyes on Peru. There's an event page on the Idle No More website in Canada, and there's an event page on Facebook, All Eyes on Peru. So that was created in response to all of these climate negotiations that the UN organizes and has been organizing for 20 years, which most people in the world don't even know are happening. Mm. And they think at this point, since we have a very small window left to really affect change that's going to ensure the future of the coming generations, it's imperative that all of our human eyes are on what happens at these UN climate talks. And so we'll have speakers talking about the talks and the Rights of Mother Earth movement and different actions occurring around the Americas of indigenous resistance to the fossil fuel industry and sovereignty rights and issues like that.
You know, I think probably most of our audience knows about Idle No More, but I want to make sure that they know about it. Can you just tell the origin story in simple terms of Idle No More, who it is and how it started?
Idle No More started by four women in Canada, three First Nations women and one woman who identifies herself as of settler descent, which I really appreciate. And they began the movement Idle No More in response to legislation that was coming down from the Harper administration there that was demolishing environmental rights and violating treaties and violating First Nations rights. The best example I can give of that legislation and why people rose up at that time was that on December 4th, 2019, 2012, there were over 200 million bodies of water that were federally protected in Canada. On December 5th, after Bill C-45 passed, it was reduced to under 200 bodies of water that were federally protected. And so it was that type of jarring legislation that inspired these four women to rise up and say, all of us need to be idle no more. And that movement quickly spread all around the world, with people posting solidarity signs on social media. And here in the Bay Area, I think my husband and I were probably the first people to show up at the Canadian consulate in solidarity with our First Nations brothers and sisters on December 10th, which was the day that Chief Teresa Spence went on her, it was over a month-long fast around that issue. And so since then, there are many, many Idle No More groups around the world, and here in the United States, our local group is one of the more active ones.
And you have a Facebook page, right?
Yes, and it's Idle No More SF Bay.
Great. Well, you know, the drastic legislation you just mentioned that was just, it sounds like a sudden shock and so extreme that sort of jolted Idle No More into coming up makes me want to read a quote from the declaration back from the Women's Congress. It says, and we'll talk about this in a minute, we're about to take a break, but you can both think about this quote as I want to hear your thoughts. We withdraw our consent from the institutions and practices that have put the world in peril. So we'll come back in a minute. I think right now we're going to take a station break, so please stand by for more from Penny Opal Plant and Robin Milam.
This is KWMR, 90.5 Point Reyes Station, 89.9 Bolinas, and 92.3 San Geronimo Valley.
So getting back to the declaration from Moab, or Robin, you can correct me if I'm reading from the other declaration from this year's conference. I'm going to reread the quote and another one. First, we withdraw our consent from the institutions and practices that have put the world in peril. And then later in the document it says, we adopt and give our consent to the following Bill of Rights for future generations, present generations' Bill of Responsibilities, and guiding principles. I'm sure you both have a lot to say. Maybe, Robin, do you want to jump back in and talk, put that into context of the rights of nature and the Women's Congress? What does it mean to withdraw our consent from these old institutions and give our consent to the new Bill of Rights and Bill of Responsibilities and guiding principles?
Well, the notion of withdrawing consent is a very, and I love that you picked up on it, because it is a very powerful action to take, especially because so much of climate change has come about because we haven't withdrawn our consent. We let things just happen unconsciously. And by saying that we are going to withdraw our consent raises the level of consciousness around what is actually happening. And then saying, as we withdraw our consent, this is what we want to put priority on and what we want to give consent to. And that is the recognition that all members of our Earth family have the right to exist, to have healthy environments, to flourish, to regenerate their vital cycles, and that we as human beings on this planet have a responsibility to be sure that we protect the rights of all generations, both human and non-human members of our community.
I love the work you're doing. This is Bing. And
Hi, Bing.
This idea of intergenerational justice, it just seems so unfair to the future generations that we're leaving them with a despoiled planet. And my wife and I have three grandchildren, or five actually, with our previous marriages, and that's why I'm in this battle too, is to think I'm thinking about them. But I have a question. Now, the toughest part of any declaration is putting it into action, and that requires strategic thinking about power and action. Who's doing that strategic thinking now, and what happens next?
Well, with respect to the Women's Congress, there plans are being made to host another Congress probably in 2 years. But much of my work is being done through the Global Alliance for Rights of Nature. And the Global Alliance is an international alliance of individuals and organizations. We have members of our executive committee on each of the continents except for Antarctica. And one of the things that we are doing, the reason why I'm headed to Lima, and Penny was with us in Ecuador earlier this year when we launched the International Rights of Nature Tribunal. And the intention of the tribunal is to examine situations and conditions on our planet, such as one of the cases that we're going to be looking at is the context of climate change itself and the conditions of climate change and causal factors and some of the false solutions that are being put forward. And then we're also looking at cases such as the BP oil spill, the Deepwater Horizon oil spill that happened in the Gulf of Mexico, the Texaco Chevron case that polluted the pristine rainforest of the Amazon of Ecuador. There's a Bagua, a human rights case where a community was massacred because they were taking stands to protect their own community. And we will be in Ecuador. We looked at, I believe, 8 cases. And in Lima, we're going to be looking at a dozen cases. And the intention is to host more of a teach-in, to examine these cases, looking at, first of all, making the assumption that rights of nature is the law, which it is in a few countries, and I can speak to that, but making the assumption that rights of nature, rights of Mother Earth, is the law. And given that context, how do we as a society look at the Chevron Texaco disaster, the BP case, and recognizing that the oceans and the forest itself, we need as humans to serve as guardians to protect these areas, and the need of the forest itself and the oceans themselves to be healthy so that the planet can be in balance. And so to answer your question, we've got people from all over the world who are coming forward recognizing that one of the core issues is how we look at our relationship with our planet, because all of our legal systems in our culture, we've separated ourselves from Mother Earth in the sacred relationship that we have with Mother Earth. And recognizing rights of nature, rights of Mother Earth, is going back and reclaiming the traditional indigenous wisdom around the sacred relationship and recognizing that we're all part of the same biosphere. And we all need to honor not only humans, but also every member of the biosphere in a way that keeps us all healthy and whole.
I'm familiar with the work of Polly Higgins in the UK, her work on ecocide. That's another way of coming at this, I think. Work with Polly?
Well, what Polly is advocating, the one of the underlying themes that Polly is advocating is recognizing rights of nature and rights of Mother Earth. But what she is saying is we need to have an international court that specifically addresses ecocide and addresses the crime. And, you know, I agree with that. In fact, the theory and concept behind our tribunals is somewhat aligned with that. What we are saying is an even fundamentally more profound position to take and to give our consent to is this recognition that we've got to honor our right relationship with the planet and all of our as Penny and indigenous peoples so powerfully relate as all of our relations.
And I want to take that focus on the word rights and bring Penny back in to talk about, you know, rights always sounds to me like a European-derived term. And I know that from reading your the literature of the Women's Congress and communicating a bit with both of you, that first of all, there are rights, and with them come responsibilities, and also that there's a difference between the rights of nature and the rights of Mother Earth. So those are two different questions. But if you want to talk about those two very important differences?
Sure. First, I want to say about what colonization has done to the human family. Because for between 5 and 10,000 years, for those people who were colonized early in Europe and Asia, the worst crime of that was severing humanity from the connectedness of everything that exists on the biosphere of our mother. And because of that, we find ourselves in the position that we are today, where humanity has risen to, and it's a little bit harsh, but I'm going to go ahead and say it, many of our relatives are so arrogant that they think that they're above the laws of Mother Earth. And in fact, from my perspective, she has been incredibly patient with her wayward children of human beings, and that she does not negotiate. You know, every time I see these climate talks, I think, well, here are these humans who have forgotten that they exist within this very powerful being, that they are not separate from her, that they are a part of her. And they're negotiating together when she doesn't negotiate. Whenever she is ready, she will create another storm. She will create another drought. She will create some more flooding because we have caused her system to be out of balance. And when people begin to decolonize themselves, that's definitely part of the process of recognizing that we are no greater nor less valuable than an ant, an earthworm, a lizard, any tree, any of the other parts of the web of life that exists around her. And it is our arrogance that is taking down hundreds of our relatives every day into extinction. And that is appalling, and it should be appalling to all of us, especially given the fact that the window of time for humanity to roll back the damages that we've caused is shrinking every single year. Bill McKibben, Naomi Klein, and many of the other very well-known activists are all starting to panic a little bit because that window is shrinking and we really don't have very much time left. I've heard 9 to 10 years to really draw back the parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere. So all of the global thinking and all of the global work and networking and conferences and work within the UN to bring, you know, these important concepts forward are vitally important. But on the other hand, here in the United States, as we've seen in this last election, we are not going to be taken care of by the state or by the federal government. And there have been some very powerful successes just within the last few years. In this last election, Chevron put over $3 million into the local election. And every day they were sending out smear propaganda on all of the progressive candidates.
This is for Richmond City Council, right? And the mayor?
And the mayor. And we won.
Yep.
We won in spite of all of that money. And that's just the money that we know about that they put in. The fracking bans that have been happening all over the country, many of which are due to Shannon Biggs, have been very successful. And each time a corporation or the state files a lawsuit about those bans, the people around there automatically understand we do not have a democracy if we can't decide where we live. And so my perspective on all of that is that Mother Earth's immune response is activating. And there are those people around the world who felt that call many, many years ago. And there are people that are rising up on a daily basis because as part of her system and not separate than that, than her system, we feel her and we respond to her call. And we understand that it's going to take some really serious responses from us. And those responses include the Lakota people saying that this is where they draw the line. And they are putting their lives at risk if the Keystone Pipeline is approved. And the thousands and thousands of people that will join them. These are the people up in Canada, our First Nations relatives and their allies, who are building structures along the pipeline route and kicking out the surveyors on their traditional unceded land.
Huh.
These are the people in Romania who, of the village people, you know, peasants, so-called peasant people, but people of the earth in Romania who last year, when Chevron decided to go into their community and frack, the 90-year-old grandmas down to little tiny children blocked those bulldozers. And these are just a few of the things I know about because the mainstream media will not let us know what our relatives are doing all over the world as her immune response rising up. And so even though we are we're intellectually not knowing about each other, I feel all those people in my heart. And I know that there are millions and millions of people rising up because her immune response is activating. And the difference between Mother Earth and Mother Nature, or just the word nature, is the difference between those of us in the human family who understand that we're part of the system, that we are not separate, and those of us who are still intellectualizing that concept.
That was very deep.
Yeah.
I'm very pleased that we're hearing the stories, the real stories of right now, current resistance coming from Indigenous people on our own land and all over the world. I was pleased that the Women's Congress acknowledged that it was not, in composition, was not representative of the world's women. I think it's so important that we not only hear the stories of what's actually happening, but recognize where the leadership is coming from. Yes.
I just want to add another point, and that is the word rights is the language of our legal systems. And it comes out of the settlers and the colonization. In many Indigenous languages, there isn't even a word for rights. Because when you're so deeply connected with Mother Earth and you're living from the space of gratitude and the give and take in that relationship, in our relationship with Mother Earth, there's no need for the word right.
And that's where the word responsibility comes in, right?
That's where the, yes. In fact, so many times I hear Tom Goldtooth and others that I work with say, when we hear you say rights, we think responsibility. And when we hear you say resources as in natural resources, we are thinking relations.
Mm. And for the listener, Tom Goldtooth is the director of the Indigenous Environmental Network, right?
Yes.
I would just like to add to that piece the concept of reciprocity, because in traditional Indigenous communities or traditional people, there is nothing taken from nature without something given back, ever. It doesn't happen.
Thank you. I think this conceptual framework is part of what you're, you know, what the Declaration is about is very profound, and I think it's worth people taking a look at futurefirst.us to try to find this Declaration and print it out and give it some thought. We're running a little short on time, and we have so much we want to talk to you about. One of the things I know, Penny, about you as a longtime activist is that I know you and Bing met each other or certainly spent time with each other on the climate train crossing the country to New York to participate in the huge climate march this fall. Do you and Bing, you want to talk about what happened on the train and what you took away from it?
Yeah, it was quite an amazing trip. It's 4 days across country, and every hour there was a workshop, and with 170 activists finally arriving in New York. And I loved this. When we arrived at Penn Station, the activists gathered together and sang this song. I just want to play a little bit. You can really feel their spirit and heart. Hi, Penny. Did that bring back memories?
Yes. Thank you, Bing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really is.
I just want to say we were going there for the march, of course, that occurred on September 20th, 21st, with 400,000 people on the streets. And I have to say they put Indigenous peoples at the front of the parade. I thought that was quite significant.
Oh, we always demand that.
Mm-hmm.
It's our right to be at the front of every march. This is our land, and it's just appropriate for that to be that way.
I agree completely, and I think that it was that many people on the street really had some influence on the Senate defeat of the Keystone XL pipeline last week.
Yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't put a lot of faith or stock in what happens. I just don't. I have a bumper sticker on my car that says, "Sure, you can just trust the government, just ask an Indian." So that's my feeling about politics. I'm not a political activist. I am active as my spiritual practice in order to ensure the future for the coming generation. But I can tell you that the climate train was an extraordinary experience, and I just want to share a couple of things. And one of them was that as we were going up through the Sierras, Shannon and I looked out the window, and in the middle of the forest with no road around, there were
about four or five children with about four or five adults with their big signs saying, thank you for representing us in New York, climate safety, you know, those kinds of signs. And we both burst into tears, and we saw things like that all along the way, you know, at the big major stops where teachers brought their classes to witness this amazing event of us going across the country for the future of these children. And, you know, it was just a really, really powerful, powerful time with a lot of people that I would never have met, you know, had it not been for the climate train.
You just heard Penny Opal Plant from the Bay Area Rights of Nature Alliance and Idle No More Bay Area. We're also speaking with Robin Milam of the Global Alliance for the Rights of Nature and the Rights of Mother Earth. Well, as we look to wrap up, we've got several minutes left. There's so much coming up in all of your work. I'm aware of the Unthanksgiving Day celebration on Alcatraz this Thursday. Is that right, Penny?
Yes, and people can buy their tickets. I believe it's at the Blue and White Ferry. Get up at 4, get there by 5, and get on the boat and go to the sunrise ceremony. It happens twice a year, Thanksgiving Day and Indigenous Peoples Day, and it's powerful.
And I know it's also popular, and so I learned in recent years you can get your tickets ahead of time online. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend that. That might give you an extra 15 minutes of sleep.
Yeah. So there's so much. Let's just do a recap on what's coming up for both of your organizations. Robin, do you want to jump back in and let us know what's coming up for the Rights of Nature Alliance, both in the Bay Area and for your international organization?
Well, what's coming up internationally is the COP20 conference in Lima next week. And parallel to the UN conference, the Global Alliance for Rights of Nature is hosting a two-day tribunal on Friday and Saturday, December the 5th and 6th. So if anyone in your audience is going to be in Lima, go to our website at therightsofnature.org. That's T-H-E, rights, R-I-G-H-T-S, of nature.org. And look for the tribunal and click through and join us in Lima, where we're going to be really examining what our relationship is with the planet and going from there. And I'll let Penny speak more specifically about what's going on in the Bay Area.
Oh, thanks, Robin. So we have a week from today our All Eyes on Peru action, Idle No More action in San Francisco. It starts at 11 a.m. at UN Plaza at Market and Hayes. And we'll have a teach-in, a prayer, a round dance. And that is in support of all of our relatives who will be in Peru, including you, Robin, and the Rights of Nature Tribunal. And then our walks start in April of next year, April, May, June, July, one walk a month. And people can go to Refinery Healing Walks on Facebook. And for All Eyes on Peru, they can just Google that. And there's three different sites that are accepting RSVPs right now. And it's also on Facebook, All Eyes on Peru. And we'll be on the hashtag that we're using is Eyes on Peru. If people can't be there on Monday, just make a sign what your message would be to either the tribunal or the people who will be at the UN conference. And we'll be uploading those on Twitter and on Facebook and whatever social media you're connected to. And I'll be in connection with folks down in Peru in order to be able to share that with people who are on the ground there.
So people should upload their photos to whatever your own channel is and tag it All Eyes on Peru, is that correct?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Great.
Yep. No, just Eyes on Peru. Sorry.
Oh, Eyes on Peru. Thank you.
Shorter, Eyes on Peru.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to announce that our next program on post-carbon on Monday, December 8th at 1 p.m. will be covering the conference that Penny and I attended last weekend, Earth at Risk. It was on sustainability and social justice and just brought together so many diverse perspectives on species extinction, racism, sexual warfare, deforestation, global warming, corruption, that all stem from the same root. Penny, what do you have any comment on the conference?
Yeah, it was, you know, honestly, the reason that I went was because there were the First Nations activists there, and I really wanted to meet them face to face. There were Frida and Togastai from the Unistoten camp in BC, which are, they're fighting four different pipelines coming through their unceded territory. And they were amazing and powerful. And then there was the third man, whose name just escaped me, I'm so sorry, who talked a lot about warrior societies and what it means to be a real warrior is to protect the women, the children, and Mother Earth. And he was really impressive. And that's the reason that I went. Yesterday, I was at the Not Your Mascot action down at Santa Clara where the Washington team was playing the 49ers. And so I couldn't go on Sunday.
Great. Well, that brings us to the end of the hour. So we want to say thanks to our guest today, Penny Opal Plant of Idle No More Bay Area and the Bay Area Alliance for the Rights of Nature, and Robin Milam of the Global Alliance for the Rights of Nature and the Women's Congress of Future First. And thank you for tuning into this week's edition of Post Carbon Radio. I'm your co-host, Karin Nyhus, with Bing Gong, who's going to tell you what's coming in next week's show.
Yeah, we're going to be featuring some of the audio that I taped of some of the speakers at Earth at Risk. So that's the next, our show, Monday, December 8th at 1 p.m. And stay tuned for Cruisin' with Rick Clark.
Thank you, Penny and Robin.
Thank you.